We put the capper on another great week on Friday, September 27th. Great calls and opinions, and we got to speak to a constitutional law professor who's been teaching for over 20 years. We got his thoughts and opinions on whether or not the Democrats have a shot to impeach President Trump and what level of accusation they have to put this toward the American people. And also on Friday, our weekly update with Stratford GOP State Senator Kevin Kelly. He talked about the fact that we could settle a bunch of issues still dangling at the state capitol with a special session.
You're listening to Connecticut Today with Paul Pacelli on WICC 600.
Can we thank you for that? We do. We're at 203-333-9422-333-WICC. Hope everything is well with you and yours as we glide toward what should be a pretty good-looking weekend here. Low 70s outside, 72 right now in downtown Bridgeport. To impeach or not to impeach, everyone has an opinion. I prefer to go with the scholars on this one. Our next guest, a law professor for 25 years at three different universities. He specialized in courses including constitutional law, constitutional history, advanced constitutional law, and the First Amendment. His research into the Constitution has been cited at the U.S. Supreme Court, federal appeals courts, state Supreme Courts, various media outlets. Professor Rob Nadelson joins us. Professor Paul here in Bridgeport, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
I'm good. Boy, you must be awash in all this now. This is, for a constitutional law professor like yourself, this must be like Super Bowl Sunday, I would think, so, or something akin to that.
You know, a lot of people view it that way, but I look at it as kind of a sad time. Doesn't matter who the president is,
yep,
that when talk goes seriously in the direction of impeaching someone elected by the people of the United States under our procedures, someone who is our lead voice in international affairs, someone that our kids are supposed to look up to. I mean, it's a sad moment. It's not a time for enthusiasm or rejoicing.
What about people who say that's all well and good, Professor Nadelson, but we have to do the cold middle of the line duty here in looking at this? And people who say, I may agree with President Trump on a lot of things, maybe not on a few things, but this must be at least looked at and examined.
Well, I think that's basically true. I mean, one of the things about impeachment that is not true, that you sometimes hear, is that impeachment is just all about politics. There's nothing else to it. It is certainly true that you get hotheads on one side or another who say, don't impeach under any circumstances or impeach for any reason or no reason. And we certainly have plenty of those people in America today. But I think most Americans realize that impeachment is a legal procedure. Even though it's conducted in Congress rather than in court. In fact, the trial in the U.S. Senate of a president is presided over not by the normal Senate leadership, it's presided over by the president, presided over by the Chief Justice of the United States in order to ensure that legal standards are met. So, yes, of course, if there's serious allegation of wrongdoing, and that wrongdoing meets the constitutional requirements, that is to say, either a felony or a breach of fiduciary duty, that has to be investigated. Thus far, I have to say, I haven't seen anything, at least in the public record, to suggest that we're near that. That doesn't mean it couldn't happen, but I don't see anything quite yet.
I'm glad you led into that, Professor, because that was my next question here. We hear about, well, what does it take? And that old phrase, well, it's whatever the House deems it. We also see and hear the phrase, a high crime or a misdemeanor, and it really doesn't go beyond that. What's your view, your interpretation of that high crime or misdemeanor phrase?
Well, the phrase itself is from English practice, and we have to remember the Constitution was written by people, all of whom had been born Englishmen, or at least subject to the English flag, and they looked to English practice to fill out the words of the Constitution. If the founders had intended that an officer could be impeached for any reason, then they would not have enumerated the reasons for impeaching him, and they are treason, bribery, other high crimes, and high misdemeanors. the term high crime in modern English means a felony, a serious crime. A high misdemeanor means breach of fiduciary duty. That means breach of the kind of duties that trustees are bound by, bankers, lawyers, and so forth. You can't neglect the job, for example. You can't cheat the people whose money you are managing by stealing from them. You have to proceed in reasonable good faith. You have to be loyal and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
And to a certain extent, those standards are also are informed by what people in that business customarily do. So, for example, if we were to say that this banker violated his fiduciary duty, we would look at the prevailing standards of bankers to see how, you know, honest bankers normally operate. So, again, if we judge a president, we have to look at how presidents operate. But let's be frank. Presidents historically have stretched the truth.
Mm-hmm.
They have historically used their office sometimes to beat up on opponents. Sometimes are not terribly competent. They make mistakes. And so when you're judging President Trump, you have to more or less judge him according to those standards, unless federal law has changed in the interim in some way. So, those are the grounds that have to be proven. They have to be proven before the United States Senate. 2/3 of the senators have to agree. The charges have to be proved by what's called clear and convincing evidence, which is a pretty high standard.
Mm-hmm.
All of the senators are on oath to do impartial justice, and the procedures and the are all overseen by the Chief Justice of the United States. So we're not talking about a political circus here, however much some people might like to make it that.
And, Professor, you said something a couple of minutes ago that I think is important to stress. You said, in essence, you're saying that, you know, there are clear things or a clear standard that presidents are held to vis-a-vis an impeachable offense. As you said, the fiduciary responsibility you illustrated in the banker's case. So people have to understand, I tell them this all the time, you can't say, well, he tweets too much or we're not respected across. That's got nothing to do with impeachment. It doesn't matter, Professor, if every leader around the world hates us. That's not an impeachable offense.
That's correct. Even if you think his policies are detestable bad for the country, that's not sufficient either. I mean, there were lots of people who, when President Obama was in office, who were screaming for impeachment because they didn't like his policies. I'm sorry, policy differences are not grounds for impeachment.
That's what elections are for.
That point was essential. That's right.
Yeah.
That point was also the one essentially made by Edmund Randolph, one of the founders of the one of the writers of the Constitution. In fact, one of the more prominent ones, that you don't impeach people because you disagree with their opinions. You impeach people because they're not doing the job at all, or they're stealing from the public treasury, or they have been found guilty of secret dealings by which they sell their country out in exchange for cash payments, that sort of thing. In fact, it's one of the things the founders no doubt had in mind, because in the 17th century, there was an English king, Charles II, who was doing that. He had a deal with Louis XIV of France, who was paying him money in exchange for changes in policy. That's the kind of thing for which you impeach officials, not because you disagree with their policy.
The Serious Constitutional Law with Professor Rob Nadelson, law professor for 25 years, serving at three different universities. His works have been cited all over the U.S. and at several levels of jurisprudence. He taught constitutional law, constitutional history, and advanced constitutional law. Now, Professor, back to something here. You said what a president can face regarding what might be an impeachable offense. Take me through what might be the argument from mostly Democrats and maybe some Republicans who would side with them, looking into this Ukraine situation. What could they possibly charge here or put forth as impeachable? And do you think it meets that standard?
Well, it's actually difficult for me to make that case. And, of course, as a lawyer, I'm trained in trying to state my opponent's case or any case I disagree with as strongly as possible. Yet it's really tough to do it in this instance. There have been claims that the president, by asking President Zelensky of the Ukraine to investigate Hunter Biden, there have been claims that he was seeking essentially a campaign donation from the Ukrainian government. Well, that's difficult because, generally speaking, presidents and other officials use government policy as a as a way of promoting themselves or promoting campaigns all the time. I mean, that's every time a member of Congress votes for a federal an item of federal largesse that he thinks is going to help is going to his constituents are going to like, it's a kind of campaigning. So I don't think that holds much water. If the president had said to President Zelensky, you know, we're going to hold back aid unless you did this, this would be a stronger case. On the other hand, remember, you don't want to judge this president differently from other officials. Vice President Biden has been caught, well, actually told the Council on Foreign Relations, that's precisely what he did with the Ukrainian president on another occasion. He said, if you don't do this, unless you drop a particular prosecutor, we're going to hold back aid. I don't think either of those cases is impeachable under the circumstances. There have been claims that an impeachable offense is the fact that foreign governments do business with Mr. Trump's businesses, his hotels, and so forth.
The emoluments clause thing, yeah.
Yeah, the foreign emoluments clause. I actually invested, and by the way, I will tell you, I did not vote for Donald Trump, nor for that matter did I vote for Hillary Clinton. So I don't have a dog in the fight particularly. Just want to make that real clear.
All right, thank you. Yeah.
But I investigated the question of whether continuing to own Trump hotels and having foreign governments purchase rooms there, whether that violated the Foreign Emoluments Clause. And it was pretty clear to me, based on the evidence from the founding era, that that was not, in fact, a violation. That a foreign emolument meant more like a, you know, a cash payment, a bribe or something to the president than that. So is that an impeachable offense? Again, I don't think so. As I said, I think it's pretty weak. The other thing to keep in mind also is that even if the president technically has committed a crime, a felony, the Senate may still not convict. And the outstanding example here was Bill Clinton. Bill Clinton was clearly guilty of the felony of perjury. He was disbarred by the Arkansas by the state of Arkansas for that purpose, for that reason. He wound up having to pay, I guess, settlement money to Paula Jones.
Yeah.
So it was clear evidence that he had committed a perjury in a sexual harassment case. And nevertheless, the Senate elected not to convict him, although they could have. And I think one of the reasons they did is because of the great seriousness involved in the proceedings of removing somebody who's been elected by the American people and who is essentially the leader of the free world. And that's why these things are occasions for sadness, not occasions for glee or for enthusiasm.
And you mentioned, I think, quite properly there, Professor, in why he was not removed and why we have never, through the impeachment process, we've never removed a president. I mean, this is serious stuff.
Yeah, we have never removed a president. The first president impeached was Andrew Johnson, who succeeded President Lincoln. He was accused of violating a law in that he had removed members of his cabinet without the permission of the Senate. He steadfastly held to the position that the law was unconstitutional, even though the Senate consisted overwhelmingly of his opponents. They still acquitted him in a dramatic story, which, by the way, comprises a chapter in John F. Kennedy's Profiles in Courage. in which he talks about those senators who, although fierce opponents of Andrew Johnson, nevertheless voted to acquit him. P.S. President Johnson ultimately was vindicated when the U.S. Supreme Court, decades later, held that that law was unconstitutional.
Yeah, I have a fear, Professor, that, and look, I am a conservative. I voted for President Trump in the general. I did not vote for him in the primary here in Connecticut. Yep. But my fear is that, and I think that maybe Nancy Pelosi she'll try to prevail in the end. I think she's allowing this as some red meat for the base. I fear that this is taking better flight if there's nothing, as you say, that meets the high standard that needs to be met here. My fear is this being done simply because of whatever level of hatred there is for this man out there. And again, there are plenty of things he does that I think are detestable. He does some interesting things policy-wise. But as you said before, this is the abort button on a space capsule here, and it's rarely, if ever, hit.
Nancy Pelosi is a smart politician. She wouldn't have been elected by her colleagues as Speaker of the House unless she were a smart politician. I'm actually a little surprised she pulled the cork out of this particular bottle at this time, because it's going to have a number. And I'm taking off my constitutional scholar hat.
Sure, go ahead. Yeah.
I'm putting on my former politician hat.
We got about a minute and a half left. Yeah.
Yeah. But she's one of the rules of politics is you don't tread on your own message. In other words, you don't do things that obscure the message you're trying to get out. One of the effects of this is going to be make it much more difficult for Democratic candidates for president to get their positive messages out.
Yeah.
Because all anybody's going to be thinking about is the potential impeachment of Donald Trump. So I think she made a mistake, although who knows what forces were pushing her in that direction.
Yeah, it could be the threat of primarying, otherwise centrist Democrats by far leftists. Professor Rob Nadelson, thank you so much for this half hour. It's been fascinating. You can get more on Professor Nadelson at independenceinstitute.org. Run it all together, or you can go to i2i.org. i2i.org. Professor, thank you, and we hope to speak in the future. Thank you.
Thank you. I'd like that. Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye-bye. Professor Rob Nadelson, well-known constitutional scholar, 25 years of teaching, 3 different universities, admitted right there that he did not vote for President Trump, but does not think this meets the level of an impeachment. Thank you, Mr. Voice Man. It's 19 past 5. Coming up at 5:20, our weekly check-in with Republican State Senator Kevin Kelly of Stratford, representing the great municipality of Stratford. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, I'm pretty good. Yourself, Paul?
I'm all right, Kevin. We maybe straightened out this meals tax thing. The DRS says, okay, we goofed. We never thought it would happen this way. Wink, wink. So now it's sort of been straightened out, but I know you and Senator Frisano and a bunch of the Republican caucus are still uneasy with the fact, Kevin, that the language is still on the books.
Correct, Paul. I mean, the fact is, if you represent taxpayers and you don't want the taxpayers to constantly get fleeced, then anything short of getting the language out of the bill isn't really protecting them. I found it interesting that the Senate Democrats, were talking about how they, got rid of this tax when they first were saying it wasn't really there. Now you have guidance, but there's another place where we have guidance, the Department of Labor, on the 80-20, restaurant tax tip percentage. And those restaurants are now being sued by the workers because the law specifically says something else. And the same thing could happen here. Big Y will be interesting whether, like, the Big Y's and Stop and Shop still charge the tax, because restaurants have to charge that tax. And if the restaurants are being taxed to do the same thing, don't be surprised if they sue, Big Y and Stop and Shop for not collecting the tax that's on the books.
Kevin, I don't get it. What is so hard? And I know there were a bunch of letters and statements requesting it. It didn't happen. But what would be so difficult, and I know they said there was a price tag on it of $30,000, I get it, a day. What would be so difficult to, you know, get a special session together for one day, get everybody back from their European villas, you know, come to Hartford one day, and say, okay, we're only going to concentrate on this today. Let's change the language to read this. It seems to me, Kevin, I'm just a dummy here behind a microphone, it seems that that could be done in a few hours.
It can be done in a few hours, Paul. And what's, you know, A, they can do it. We can do it in one day. You know, on the floor of the Senate, the day they were voting on the bill, I pointed this out. I said, this is going to really hit the middle and lower class hardest. It's a regressive tax. It's going to hit people on fixed income, seniors. They didn't care, and they imposed it anyway. And now they're actually out there trying to take credit for this advice. But the fact of the matter is, if people are sick and tired of constantly having the state of Connecticut tax and tax everything, you know, you've got trade-in on cars, mm-hmm. you've got meals. Everywhere you turn around, there's
now
a
you,
tax. We'll stop voting for Democrats.
Now you have the tax if you have a streaming music service. That was only, what, 1%? Now it's a full sales tax a month. I saw a couple of friends of mine sent me, you know, screenshots of their Spotify accounts telling them, they're like, what's this? And I explained what it was.
Exactly. And this is, you know, if you want change, there is change. There are individuals like myself that don't believe that this is what should constantly happen to Connecticut's working and middle class, that you should be constantly under, you know, a government hand in your wallet, taking more money off your table and making it harder to live and make ends meet in Connecticut.
Mm-hmm.
There's $20 billion. Connecticut's government can live within its means. It's just not doing so under the current governor and his majority.
Speaking of the governor, Kevin, I want to touch on a couple things here in the time we have left. First of all, you alluded to it, the whole 2080 thing, and I've had numerous guests on from small businesses, from restaurants talking about this. And it seems like, again, this is a thing where everybody says we need to do something. Is anything going to be happening to codify this to say, yeah, we are going by the state labor department rule here. There's no way that these restaurants who, in good faith, went by the information they were given, there's no way they should be sued.
Exactly, Paul. And this is why, you know, we need the special session on the grocery tax, because you got to get that language out of the bill. If you don't get the language out of the bill, all you have is a wink and a nod from the governor to one of his agencies. And that doesn't work, because obviously restaurants are being sued.
Mm-hmm.
And that hurts jobs. It hurts the worker. And this is where I think, you know, you're saying, oh, it's just, you know, $30,000 for the grocery tax. Well, it could be, we could add this on to the special session, too.
Yeah, sure.
This. But once again, there's no appetite on the side of Democrats to fix this. And that's where you got to start asking, well, who do they protect? Do they protect the working class taxpayer? Or are they protecting, you know, big government, big labor, big business? Because that's who, you know, quite frankly, they're protecting nowadays, not the middle-class individual family.
Kevin, one final thing. You probably read the stories. The governor getting together with Governor Cuomo from New York State the other day. They talked about a couple of things, and the governor remarking that he doesn't have any executive power constitutionally here in the state to do anything like Governor Cuomo did with flavored cartridges for these e-cigs, like Governor Baker did in Massachusetts, a complete moratorium for 4 months. He kind of sent up the flag to you guys and gals in the legislature saying, well, we'll see what we can do. Any thoughts on that? What are your personal thoughts on maybe a timeout, or are we in danger of overreacting here, you think?
Well, I think a timeout is warranted. I mean, when you see what's going on in the news nationally, you see the warnings that are coming from CDC. These are clearly a nicotine delivery system, and what is most troubling is they're available to the youth, and they're in such, flavors. And even though we passed the law to restrict that to people under 21, mm-hmm. or to over 21, I mean, it's obviously not working. And so, once again, this would be a great issue for a special session. Let's give the governor the authority to, let's have a timeout, let's see what it is, let's get some more information from CDC. Why are these health risks happening? And you have people all over the country using these and becoming very sick, if not dying, I think it's something that we need to pay attention to and could do. But once again, you have, you know, the governor and his majority don't think it's important enough to reconvene us. And we just talked here in the past couple minutes of three big issues that I think would help taxpayers, create jobs, and protect our youth. That's not important? I don't know. I think it is.
Kevin, thank you on that note. Wish you a happy weekend, and we'll talk next week. Thanks, Kevin.
You bet, Paul.
Thanks. Appreciate it. Bye-bye. There you go. So, yeah, there's three things that could be taken care of maybe in a day or two with a special session, but not happening. And, yeah, it costs, by the way, in case you're wondering, that $30,000 figure, apparently because of utilities and staffing and Capitol Police and State Police, it costs, I saw a figure, it costs about $30,000 a day to run the General Assembly.